The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Don't count Steve Bannon out. And here's why. Do you remember the days when talks of amnesty torpedoed Marco Rubio? When low energy Jeb was destroyed by candidate Trump because he referred to illegal immigration and DACA as an act of love? Well, those days were so 5 minutes ago. Yesterday, in a rare glimpse in a meeting between the president and lawmakers, President Trump said DACA, quote, should be a bill of love. This made Jeb Bush happy. Jeb was tweeting yesterday saying it's good to see him finally being reasonable. Getting a fly on the wall view into these meetings isn't really normal, so you have to wonder, why were the cameras rolling yesterday? Was it a mistake, or was there something else going on here? Here's what I believe. The news of the day was dominated by Michael Wolff's book and questions over Trump's mental stability. Anybody see any mental unstable president in that meeting? Because I didn't. He was uncharacteristically prepared, reserved, attentive, engaged. And he was also very left. Some have criticized the president's willingness and ability to reach across the aisle and compromise. Boy, that wasn't the case yesterday. It was actually hard to determine whether Trump favored the Democrats at the table or the Republicans. When Feinstein posed the question about the president's willingness to do a, quote, clean DACA bill now and security for the border later, Trump went into full agreeable mode. It took the House Majority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, to remind President Trump that Feinstein didn't mention the wall or border security. Now, he eventually made his intentions a little more clear, but it all kind of seemed like an afterthought for him. In fact, he said at one point, you go ahead and put it all together, and I don't care what it is, I'll sign it. He seemed to want to hurry everything along. Didn't matter, he said, quote, whether I like or agree with it, I will sign anything you put in front of me. That's not a leader. There's no leadership there. But it seems like the leader had an ulterior purpose or motive. For those that are pissed off on Twitter that Trump is considering DACA, you might as well get used to it. Trump knows it as well as everybody in the House and the Senate. Without DACA, Trump and the Republicans have zero leverage to do anything with border security and immigration reform. However, the master negotiator just gave them DACA yesterday. DACA isn't going anywhere. In fact, this thing almost seemed planned out before it even started. So why keep rolling? Why? The real work on immigration has already happened, and it's going to be finalized during a closed-door session. But Trump, the Democrats, and the Republicans wanted their constituents to know something. Feinstein wanted to project the appearance that DACA was their primary motivation. McCarthy wanted Republicans to know that border security and immigration reform is a higher priority than anything like amnesty. And Trump, he wanted to show everybody that he was mentally stable. Kushner, Ivanka coached him. This is their influence because he is more than willing to reach across the aisle and cooperate. He even suggested they bring back earmarks. Quite honestly, after seeing it yesterday, you should rename Pennsylvania Avenue, and it should be renamed Broadway, because that theater was very good yesterday.
It's Wednesday, January 10th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm not really sure, though, it was better than Cats. What did you think, Stu?
No, Cats was definitely superior. No, it was actually pretty interesting to watch, I thought.
It was horrifying to watch.
Was it?
It was horrifying to watch.
But that's what everyone says Trump is like behind closed doors. You hear that all the time. He's a guy who's just affable and people like him and he kind of goes along with what people say. And you know, it's different than his sort of public speeches. And that is how he appeared yesterday. I mean, he basically said, look, I'm not concerned about what you guys come up with. He said, I believe my position is whatever you guys come up with. So, I mean, that's a...
Holy cow.
He doesn't...
That's,
you know,
that's not what anybody elected. That's not what anybody elected. You did not elect somebody to say, to Congress, I'll sign whatever you guys... He said yesterday, quote, I trust you guys. Well, the American people don't trust Congress. But we'll get into that later. There was something that broke this morning at 5 o'clock that really concerned me, that the Asian markets began to sell a lot of American stock and started getting out of anything American around 5 a.m. This was caused by China. China announced that they're thinking about getting out of U.S. treasuries. Now, remember, they'll never do that because they need us so much. And they're thinking about either slowing down on their buying or stopping the buying of U.S. treasuries. That's the first step. The next step is selling the U.S. treasuries. There's nobody that can afford to buy all of our treasuries that we need except for China or our own central bank. This is not going to be good if this indeed happens. I wanted to get Chris Martinson on. He is the co-founder and CEO of Peak Prosperity, and find out what he thinks, if I'm misreading this, if I am jumping to conclusions, that this is really not a good thing. Chris, welcome to the program.
Glenn, it's a real pleasure to be back with you today.
Thanks. So am I reading this right?
Well, you absolutely are. This comes at a very critical moment for the long-dated U.S. Treasury market, the 10- and 30-year market out there, because they've been bumping up against, yields have been bumping up against a trend line that's been in place for 30 years. We've had yields going down, and they were right up against the upper channel. They were ready to pop into territory that would bring out the bond bears, those things that are so scary to everybody in power. Because once you start getting a sell-off in long-dated U.S. paper, who knows, it ties to everything, Glenn. It just goes everywhere. So China comes out and says exactly what you said. Hey, we're thinking of slowing or stopping buying of treasuries, and that's on top of the most recent U.S. tax plan, which is going to cause us to issue a bunch more treasuries in the near future. So all of a sudden, the treasury market wakes up and says, hey, looks like there's more supply than we thought. We're going to have to sell some of these things. And indeed, we saw a very interesting move this morning in interest rates. We're going to have to watch it carefully because, you know, my view, Glenn, we're in the everything bubble. Everything's in a bubble.
Yeah.
Those are always just in search of a pin. Is this the pin? I don't know.
Okay. So Chris, let me, because I've just issued a bunch of my, you know, forecasting or predictions for 2018, and some of them are kind of far out there. But the one that I am looking at for the market, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I believe that if the bond market begins to melt down, and I'm not an expert, so you are, so help me out. The bond market begins to melt down like this. You take your money out of bonds, you're going to put it someplace. The markets are going up. The stock market is going up. Historically speaking, before any huge bubble breaks, you'll have a time of euphoria, a 12 to 24 month period of euphoria, where the stock market kind of feels like Bitcoin felt in November, a melt up. I believe that we are at the beginning of a melt up, that this rise to 25,000 is the beginning of a melt up, and it's going to suck a lot of money into the stock market. Do you think that's possible? Probable?
It's possible, and I'm going to back off on probable because of one thing. the piece that's really coming to both the stock market and the bond market is the amount of leverage that's in there right now. So leverage means people are borrowing. You know, all these hedge funds out there, they're trying to earn their 2 and 20, these exorbitant fees. What do? People want the safety of bonds, and they're getting 2% off of them. What do? Well, what you do is you borrow 4 times the amount of money you actually have, and now you're suddenly getting 8% because 4 times 2 is 8. So they're borrowed a lot of money, and in the bond market, there's extraordinarily low liquidity, meaning I've watched trades sit on the tape for hours, sometimes days, when they used to sell in minutes. And so there's not a lot of liquidity, and there's a lot of leverage. You put those two L's together, and what you find out is that when bonds start to sell off, they actually vacuum money from other parts of the market, because you have to pay for the loss. Yeah.
Got it.
And the stock market as well has the highest amount of margin debt, which is a form of leverage, that's ever been seen on record, higher than we saw in 2000, higher than 2007. So there's a lot of leverage out there, and this is the concern a lot of traders have, is that once you get an unwind started, how fast does it go? Where does it go? How do all the threads connect? It's like with Lehman, you don't really know until it happens just how many of those threads were interconnected. That's the state of our market. I know it's very complex. I didn't mean to over.
So that's all right, Chris. So help me out on this. Last week, the president of China went out in front of all of his forces, and he said, "Prepare for war." And it was kind of shocking language from him. But it didn't seem like they were being aggressive as much as, you know, hey, the world's changing and we have to prepare for war. Is it possible that this is some sort of bluff with them? Or do you believe they are really, truly considering getting out of our treasuries?
Well, the most important report that was ever released came out in June of last year, 2017, and it was released by the Beijing Petroleum University. And the report said, hey, we've studied it intensively. China is going to experience a peak in oil output in 2018. That's from conventional, unconventional, all their shale. They looked at everything and said, that's it. And they looked at their own rising demand and said, oh, my goodness, we are going to have to import twice as much oil as we currently are within the next 12 years. It puts them really at crossroads with the United States, who's also still a large importer, and with a lot of Europe. And we saw Saudi Arabia travel to Beijing shortly after that report was released, and they struck a bunch of deals. There's a huge realignment going on around this. Everything you hear about the United States military and the South China Sea, those Spratly Islands, the sandbars that the Chinese are building, those are there because there are oil and gas reserves in the South China Sea that they want. That's the nature of this game that we have to look at, because China is full to the gills in their leadership with very serious people who've got great credentials, a lot of scientists, a lot of engineers, doctors, lawyers, you know, very few lawyers. And they understand that this next part of the game is going to be all about the Middle East. It's very much about resources. And that's where I think the war talk comes from.
When people talk about bonds, to break it down for the average person, the United States is basically selling its debt, and those time out. And so you can buy a 1 year or a 10 year or a 30 year treasury, and it times out. Aren't there a lot of big bonds that are now up that we have to refinance?
There's a lot of that going on, and it's across the whole bond universe. Remember, you know, the United States government issues debt, so do corporations. Households are in debt, so you look at student loans, auto loans, subprime auto loans, mortgages, corporations making debt, AAA-rated corporations, junk-rated. We've never seen this much debt either in the United States or the world. So from 2007, this whole recovery has really been based on a lot of printing. And the whole world's done it. And so the thing that scares me the most is that, again, we're looking for a pin. It could be Europe. You know, right now, here's the craziest statistic I know. This is how badly central banks have messed everything up. Right now, 2-year treasury paper from the United States government has a higher yield than 2-year Greek debt. That means somehow people are supposed to, you know, be valuing Greece as being more creditworthy than the United States right now. That's nuts. That's not reality. That's how badly distorted everything is. When things are that badly distorted, you have to be worried about what happens when reality comes back and people begin to value everything in what I think in a more fair, more realistic way. You're going to see some sell-offs that are going to be really painful.
Chris Martinson, thank you so much.
Chris Martinson is the co-founder and CEO of Peak Prosperity. You can get his website at peakprosperity.com.
I've been telling you about Blinds.com for several reasons. They completely transform your home. They did with our home. They're really, really great. And they have tremendous, tremendous customer service. And they'll do the same for you. And I know that because we hear from people who use Blinds.com. Mark from Tempe, he's in Arizona. He said, I heard Glenn Beck talk about Blinds.com and had faith in him and his suggestion. I just want to let you know, amazing service, quick delivery, installation was a breeze. They look fantastic. I ordered more 2 weeks later, and I feel exactly the same way. I'm going to tell all my friends. Take it from me. Take it from him. Try it yourself. Blinds.com. Find the perfect blinds, shades, shutters, drapes, anything. It will upgrade your home for less money than almost any other home improvement. They'll send you free samples. Shipping is free. Plus, you get free design consultation, and they will guide you through installation step by step. Find out yourself why 20 million Americans have already trusted Blinds.com, making them the number one online retailer of custom window covering. You can read more stories about Mark if you don't want to take my word for it. Check it out yourself. Do your own homework. The best. Blinds.com/Beck. They always have great prices. They're even better right now. Find out for yourself at Blinds.com/Beck. That's Blinds.com/Beck. Rules and restrictions apply.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
I have to disagree with Chris on one thing, and that is on this meltdown or melt up. And it could be just my wishful thinking, but I don't think so. Usually I am the guy who's like, it's all going to crash today. It's, get out. Everybody save your lives. There's not enough light bulbs on the ship. This time I've changed my opinion because I've done some research on history. And you know, everybody knew, anybody who was smart in 1928, you knew a crash was coming. You knew this isn't real. The whole thing is just not real. And yet over 18 or 24 months, beginning in 1928, the stock market just went through the roof and it sucked up everybody's cash. I believe there's going to come a period here soon where it will begin to feel, the stock market will begin to feel like Bitcoin did. When that feeling is going on, run for your life. I feel, and now China not buying bonds, that might change things. I don't know. But I just think that people are going to start pouring their money into the stock market, and it's going to, it will break everybody in the end. It's not real now. There's no reason for the stock market to go up. Well, that President Trump is... No, they priced that in at the election. They priced that in. And so I just feel that the next 24 months, you're going to see a melt up within the next 24 months. It could... I think we're in it now. I think this 20 to 25,000 on the Dow is the beginning of it. And it's, I kind of feel like, you know how you talk to people about, you know, the end times, and they're like, and once this happens, it's 7 years. You can count on it. It's 7 years. I kind of feel that way about the melt up. I think we could see the stock market go as high as 50. I think in my my forecast for 2018, I said I think that the Dow will be at 30,000. But I think it could go a lot higher than that. And it's going to be exuberant. You'll make money for a very short period of time. Then hold on to your pants, because you'll be selling your pants shortly thereafter. Back in a minute.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So, yesterday, I had the sound off, and I was watching the press conference for a few minutes, and I thought to myself, boy, he really looks presidential here. He looks in control. This is really good. Oh, he's talking about DACA, and he's talking about the border. Turn it up. Then I started listening to the president, and I did not recognize him. He suddenly yesterday became the guy I've been expecting the whole time. I want you to listen to what he said about comprehensive immigration reform. Listen.
My positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with. I am very much reliant on the people in this room. I know most of the people on both sides. I have a lot of respect for the people on both sides. And what I approve is going to be very much reliant on what the people in this room come to me with. I have great confidence in the people. If they come to me with things that I'm not in love with, I'm going to do it because I respect them.
I'm trying to remember the time that anybody who voted for the president said, I want you to go to Washington and trust the members of Congress on both sides. I don't remember a single voter saying on either side, we trust Congress. We believe the members of Congress will do the right thing. I certainly don't remember anyone on the right saying, even if the members of Congress on immigration, on comprehensive immigration reform, if they come to you, Mr. President, and you don't like it, I want you to trust them over us. I don't recall that. Now, here's the question. Donald Trump said at one point he could walk out on Fifth Avenue and shoot someone, and his supporters will not say a word. Well, he didn't shoot somebody. He shot you. When you have Fox News turning on President Trump over this yesterday, that's saying something. He went and he shot you. He said, I'll take the heat for it. Well, who is he going to get heat from? You. You. You have been arguing. You have been defending. You have said this is the number one thing that you want. He won on immigration. And now I'll give you DACA without anything. We got to get that done first. Let's get DACA. When was that? Because I remember everybody saying they were against DACA 100%.
It was the litmus test of whether you were an amnesty guy or not.
Right. You are for DACA. You're out. Now, some people, I believe, said, OK, I'm not for DACA and I don't want DACA, but if that's the chip we have to put down on the table to get the fence and everything else done, well, you get that done first, and then we'll talk about it. Now, if I would have said that, which I did, if I would have said that during the election, you'd hang me, which you did. You're a sellout. What's wrong with you? They'll never come through with that. They'll never do it. Well, wait a minute. I said, let's get security first. Yeah, but they'll never do it. And those people don't. Okay, all right. He yesterday sat at the table. Do you have him saying about DACA? Do we have that audio?
We have a bunch of clips on that, but I don't know which one you're talking about.
I'm talking about the one where he said, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that first.
Yeah, he did kind of back off of that after the meeting and say, oh, well, we got to have a wall. He did later on, you know, they tried to clarify that through. I mean, it was clear a couple of times that he wasn't exactly sure of the lines of debate, where he would say, you know, I think it was Feinstein who said, hey, we want a clean DACA bill.
She said, what would you say? We have people who are suffering. What would you say if we could just get DACA done now and then we come back to the border and the wall and the security? But we really need to get this done first. He said, I'm totally fine with that. I agree with you. And she said, wait a minute. You agree we could do that? Yes, we should do DACA first. But then we need to do, you know, the border. He just, that's what Tucker Carlson's whole monologue yesterday, which was shocking. His whole monologue was on, wait a minute, that's the only chip you have.
Right. And then later on, he backed off on that. Their claim was basically like he didn't understand what the term clean bill meant.
I mean, then he should not be president of the United States. Yeah, we are in the middle of the most important negotiation of what people voted for. This is what he ran on. You don't understand clean bill?
Well,
you've been president for a year now.
Their answer was his clean bill is a trade between security and DACA. When we all know that that's not, I mean, usually what they mean by clean bill, this is very common parlance of Washington, which is the one thing we're talking about. Let's just get that done and not put anything else to complicate it. So, right. So that was what Feinstein was asking about. And, you know, Trump said yes to it, but then did later on back off.
So what did he, what was the excuse for earmarks? Listen to this on what he said about earmarks.
Our system lends itself to not getting things done. And I hear so much about earmarks, the old earmark system, how there was a great friendliness when you had earmarks. But of course, they had other problems with earmarks. But maybe all of you should start thinking about going back to a form of earmarks, because this system,
Listen to this. He was not happy when they laughed at him, by the way. He was not pleased.
And I'm there with you, because this system really lends itself to not getting along. It lends itself to hostility and anger, and they hate the Republicans and they hate the Democrats. And, you know, in the old days of earmarks, you can say what you want about certain presidents and others, where they all talk about they went out to dinner at night and they all got along and they passed bills. That was an earmark system. And maybe we should think about it, and we have to put better controls because it got a little bit
stop.
Out of hand.
So here's the guy who said, I'm going to clean out the swamp because everybody's doing deals. And we said, he's the deal maker. He's the guy who's been paying both sides, mainly Democrats, because he lived in New York. He pays them off to get done what he wants to get done. He's going to clean up the swamp. Aren't we against earmarks, or are we for earmarks now?
Yeah, and the reason why those deals were done at meetings when you could trade earmarks was the politicians taking taxpayer dollars and paying each other off with them.
Yes.
So that's how those deals got done. That's not
a good bribery.
That's the swamp. That is exactly the swamp. That's a fascinating one. And let's look at this. This is Trump yesterday talking about the immigration bill again and talking about how it's a bill of love.
But I feel having the Democrats in with us is absolutely vital, because this should be a bipartisan bill. This should be a bill of love. Truly, it should be a bill of love, and we can do that. But it also has to be a bill where we're able to secure our border. Drugs are pouring into our country at a record pace. A lot of people are coming in that we can't have. We've greatly stiffened, as you know, and fewer people are trying to come in. But we have tremendous numbers of people and drugs pouring into our country. So in order to secure it, we need a wall. We need closing enforcement. We have to close enforcement loopholes.
And then, so remember Bill of Love, then remember Jeb Bush from 2014.
Yes, they broke the law, but it's not a felony. It's kind of an act of love.
Remember that?
That was one of the things that sunk Jeb Bush's campaign. And again, we did a show, Glenn, if you remember back, I don't know, it was like maybe sometime in 2016, where we had people who were Trump supporters call up and say, what's the one thing that would shake you from this guy? Now, I think we've talked about a lot of good things Trump has accomplished in the first year, and there's a list of them. But the one thing that was the overwhelming majority of people who called was if he starts flaking out on the border. I mean, these things are... I don't remember Jeb Bush ever saying he wanted to also bring back the earmark system to get it done. I mean, he's going further than any of that stuff. Marco Rubio wasn't saying this stuff. And he said comprehensive immigration reform, which is the thing that sunk Bush with people.
That was the death.
George W. Bush, Rubio, Lindsey Graham, all those people.
Ted Cruz. He said that Ted Cruz was part of the immigration comprehensive, which he wasn't.
Which he wasn't. But still, that was the accusation.
Yes.
Against Cruz, that one of the things that hammered him in a campaign about. And here he is doing the exact same stuff. I mean, this is what I expected. So this does not shake me at all. I mean, honestly, still, as a guy who was not a big Trump supporter coming into this, I'm still, he's outdoing my expectations.
Yeah.
So
this is the guy I expected.
But this is exactly the stuff that I was worried about. And many people in the audience that were Trump supporters were worried about. Does this shake you, or do you just take it? And because I think you can fairly look at this and take the totality of it and say, okay, yeah, it's been okay.
I want to hear from you, because this is what we asked. We did a show on it, a whole show. I just want to hear, what will it take? And universal immigration. If he gets shaky on immigration and the border, DACA, all of that, that was the thing. Are you still there? And does it matter? I will tell you, you're seeing a new Donald Trump, and I think you're going to. I think this is the Donald Trump that is going to stay, because this is the Donald Trump that heard in the last 48 hours. Dad, listen to me. You've gone with Bannon. You've tried all that, and it's good for your base. But that's not going to get anything done. You want to win. You got to start coming together. Bring them all together. Make them like you. Dad, that's what you do. Make them like you. Bring them together. Let's just move. You know, I know, Dad, what your supporters say, but this is really about love. This is really about love.
I will say this, too. One of the things that we know about Trump is he really likes positive media, and he got a lot of it out of that meeting yesterday.
He got a lot.
CNN was fawning over him for hours.
The New York Times was fawning over this. Bloomberg said, Democrats, take this deal right now. Take it up. Take it.
They loved it.
They loved it.
They love this, Trump. And you know, he does respond to that sort of stuff.
Yes, he does.
So it'll be interesting to see. I am. This could be another 1 or 2 day thing, right? He comes out, he has this speech, and it's no big deal.
Never
it's
know.
Theater, and it's over. So I mean, you don't want to overstate it, but this is the type of stuff that the audience of Trump supporters, because there's a lot of people in the audience that were not big supporters and voted sort of, you know, with their nose plugged on Trump. But the people who are real supporters, this is the issue they laid
the. And if the supporters don't push back on him, if he doesn't get the negative response from his supporters, he will just go.
Mm-hmm.
He'll go. And you will be left in the dustbin of history.
Because as he stated, he does not have an opinion on this. He said, my opinion is what you guys come up with.
Congress.
So whatever
Congress,
you come up with.
Not even Congress. The worst of Congress. All the people who are the flag bearers for the people we don't trust. That's who is at that table.
And if you've earned loyalty points from Donald Trump over this time, this is the time to use them.
Yep.
You know, make sure you spend them now.
Yep.
Because he needs to be influenced to say, hey, these things aren't the policies that we elected you for. This is not what we wanted. And he needs to hear that from you in the next couple of days.
888-727-BECK. Want to hear, have you changed? Do you accept it? Is this part of a John Roberts? This is what he's really doing on health care. What is this? 888-727-BECK. There is a burglary in America every 8 seconds. Do burglars give up because, you know, some houses have security systems? No. They just find a house that isn't protected. That's why securing your home is truly a necessity. If I may, I'd like to recommend Simply Safe. Ridiculously smart sensors that protect every access point of your home. If a burglar tries to break in, there's a siren that goes off to let him know that the police are already on their way. Oh my gosh, I didn't mean to be gender specific. If she decides to break into your house, Simply Safe's 24/7 monitoring is $14.99 a month. They never lock you into a long-term contract. You own the system, and there's a 60-day money-back guarantee. So there's absolutely no reason to try this. The only home security system that you should have in your home is SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Let me go to Travis in Georgia. You voted for Donald Trump. How do you feel today, Travis?
Oh, I'm very upset, very angry. Feel like I've been taken for granted. It seemed like he just dismissed all of his supporters yesterday, and I'm genuinely just very upset about it. And I'm tired of defending him. You know, it's just every day it's just something else. And when he was talking about, you know, comprehensive immigration reform is going to be phase two, and we'll start on that day two. Are you kidding me? I'm tired of trying to defend this.
Yeah, I can, you know, I thought of that last night, that here are all these people who I don't think, there are some people who are just blind supporters. There are others who are like, give the guy a chance. And man, I don't like, I'm embarrassed by this, or I don't like this, but give him a chance. And, when he, I think he just slapped people across the face yesterday. I feel bad for those people who have been out defending him and have really wrestled with defending him. But you believed, and you know, maybe this is only one day. He changes, you know, with the wind. So maybe this is just one day. Travis, keep your chin up, brother. Thank you so much for your call. Take more calls. Want to hear your opinion. 888-727-BECK, 888-727. Beck is the phone number. Also, on tonight's television program, we're going to talk a little bit about the economy and what is coming in the economic world. Some of my predictions and how I got there tonight at
Glenn
5 o'clock.
Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
When I was in high school, we were all supposed to read The Great Gatsby. Everybody had to read The Great Gatsby. And I think we were supposed to get some anti-capitalist thing out of it. But what I got out of it was, here's this guy who was shunned for who he was. He wasn't good enough for the woman that he loved. And so he went out and he created a new identity for himself. He didn't go about his, you know, transformation in the most upstanding and moral ways, but he did succeed in becoming a self-made millionaire. And he did it for the woman that he loved. As I reflect on the news of Steve Bannon's firing from Breitbart yesterday, I can't help but see a Gatsby-like figure constantly reinventing himself. Bannon was born to an Irish working-class family in Virginia. He had nothing. He worked at a junkyard for pennies. He always wanted more for his life. He became an officer in the Navy, worked at the Pentagon. In the 80s, he went into investment banking. He went to Harvard Business School, became Goldman Sachs guy. After banking, he decided he wanted to go into the movies, and he became a screenwriter and a producer. And his film credentials ultimately led to a relationship with Andrew Breitbart. When Andrew died, Bannon saw an opportunity to create a new chapter in his book, and he pushed his way into Breitbart News. And he used that as a tool to wedge himself into the White House. But he needed to court the Trump administration. So he turned Breitbart into a site that became an embarrassing propaganda outlet. And it worked. He was named Trump's chief strategist. But it wasn't long, because Steve has never really created anything himself. He has always ridden the coattails of someone else. And he's also a dangerous guy. So it didn't take long before he fell out of the White House's good graces. He started to brag that he was the brains behind the president. Then he got involved in this book. And he got involved in this book because he has a inflated sense of influence and inflated sense of self. And he was kicked to the curb. And he was back at Breitbart. And yesterday, he ushered in more of the same dangerous alt-right commentary and yellow journalism as before. And after his campaign with Roy Moore, Breitbart News, the board, fired him for good yesterday. So today, the good news is there's a new beginning for Breitbart. Maybe Andrew Breitbart's vision and what he was starting to create will actually come true now. With Bannon gone, they have a chance to restore their dignity and return to some sort of reputable reporting. Let's hope that they take that direction. As for Steve Bannon, he is going to be standing on a dock looking across the lake at the light that is calling for him. Let's just hope that in the end, the Steve Bannon story doesn't end with Bannon or us floating in a pool.
It's Wednesday, January 10th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So I really want to hear your opinion on what happened yesterday. And I want to play just the quick audio clips just to remind you where we are. Donald Trump had a had live shots of him in the cabinet room talking to all the members of Congress or the leadership of Congress about DACA and the border. And here's what he said about what he's willing to sign.
Yeah. My positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with. I am very much reliant on the people in this room. I know most of the people on both sides. I have a lot of respect for the people on both sides. And my what I approve is going to be very much reliant on what the people in this room come to me with. I have great confidence in the people. If they come to me with things that I'm not in love with, I'm going to do it because I respect them.
Okay. There's also the Trump Bill of Love, which has been a big discussion point today.
Here it is.
But I feel having the Democrats in with us is absolutely vital because this should be a bipartisan bill. This should be a bill of love. Truly, it should be a bill of love, and we can do that.
Okay.
Yeah, but it also has to be...
And the reason why that one's important is because, if you remember from the primary, here's a Jeb Bush thing from 2014 on immigration.
Yes, they broke the law, but... It's not a felony. It's kind of the it's an act of love. Mm-hmm.
There's also the his comments on earmarks, which were making the rounds yesterday. We've discussed today. Listen,
our system lends itself to not getting things done. And I hear so much about earmarks, the old earmark system, how there was a great friendliness when you had earmarks. But of course, they had other problems with earmarks. But maybe all of you should start thinking about going back to a form of earmarks, because this system,
Yeah, he goes on and he's dead serious about it.
Yeah,
and then there's one more.
Yeah, when he knows that there's pushback potentially coming from
his base,
and this audience, and anyone who's conservative on the border, he realizes that he knows that could be coming, and here is his prescription and his hall pass to Democrats and people who are more amnesty prone on the right about how they can deal with this.
Listen. I don't care. I'll take all the heat you want to give me, and I'll take the heat off both the Democrats and the Republicans.
So he'll take the heat.
He's willing to deal with. He's willing to die in a sword, basically, mm-hmm. for this DACA deal. It's an interesting perspective from the president. I mean, it's not exactly what he was saying during the campaign.
No, it's not anything like what he was saying. But I want to hear if you have been there fighting for him the whole time, standing up for him. We asked this audience, 18 months ago, what would it take? And the answer was universal. If he starts to weasel on the border and DACA and all of that. Is this weaseling? How do you feel today? Josh, South Carolina, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Good.
Good, good. So, you know, I think in this case, he's really playing three sides of the fence. I don't think he's getting enough credit for what he's actually doing out there. You know, what he's going out there, he's trying to bring all these people together. He's playing the media for stupid. And now they've gone back and gone against pretty much everything they've said and praised him yesterday on what he's doing. And I honestly don't think he's just going to give them DACA. He's dangling it in front of their face, making them think that, you know, he's going to give it to them. But at the same time, he's probably going to come out there and be like, look, we have to get both of these things done at the same exact time. If it doesn't work that way, it's just not going to work that way.
Okay, well, that's not what he said yesterday. So you think that he's that's a strategy for him?
Yeah, and you know what? That's it kind of rings true in his whole, coming forward with anything, really. When he comes out to the media and says something, does he actually do what he's going to say? Has he done that this entire time? But yet, where are we now? I'm a business owner. I own a plumbing business out of South Carolina, and everything has gotten much better. People are flooding to red states. The economy's getting crazy. I just went over how much I'm paying this year in taxes with my bookie and my accountants and things like that. And it's just everything is getting really, it's getting done. I think he's doing a lot of good things. I think there's some things like healthcare that need to get done. Mm-hmm. And if something like DACA goes through before we get some kind of immigration, a wall deal or something of that nature, then he's going ass backwards, in my opinion.
Okay.
And if he doesn't, if he goes and actually gets these things done and includes the DACA deal, I'm okay with that to a degree. I don't think any of us are okay with DACA in general, but like you said, it's pretty much the only chip he's got. And if he doesn't play that chip, then I think he's going to lose a lot of people.
So okay. It's basically, let's wait and see, right? I mean, overall, you're happy so far, but if he starts doing these things, you're not going to be happy. But he hasn't done them yet, and Trump says a lot of things he doesn't do, so we should wait until it's actually happening.
Good point. Thanks, Josh. I mean, no, go ahead.
He says a lot of things.
But I know. That's what we said last hour. We were really pissed yesterday. We're still pissed today. However, I mean, I've been happy before, and then he'll tweet something, and you just don't know.
Yeah,
Let's wait until we see what he has.
This is echoed on Twitter. People are tweeting at World of Stew, at Glenn Beck. George writes, remember the Trump meeting with Chuck and Nancy? They came out smiling. That lasted a day. So will this.
Mike.
I think that's a legitimate.
I think it is.
Could easily happen.
If he feels the heat from his supporters.
Yep. If the base does not rise up and say, don't do this, I don't think that will happen. But that's what they did when the Chuck and Nancy stuff happened, and he bailed on it the next day.
Mike, go ahead.
As a 28-year-old from New York, I already feel like my voice has no consequence whatsoever. But if he does the things that he said he was going to do yesterday, he's going to inflate the swamp. If he gives away his only leverage, DACA, he's never going to get a wall built. It's never going to happen. The Democrats always stand fast. They don't work together. They get their agenda done. They don't care about anybody's agenda but their own. And yesterday, I think Donald Trump finally showed his true colors. I mean, he was a Democrat his whole life until his, 70s? And then he's a conservative?
You voted for him.
Unfortunately, I did, because Ted Cruz was gone by the time...
Sure.
New York got to vote in the primaries, and then I wasn't going to vote for Hillary Clinton, that's for sure. So
what was your... So why do you say your voice doesn't count? You already feel that way.
Well, it's New York. I mean, okay. Governor Cuomo only has to win Westchester County South, and he wins every re-election. I mean, if you're a conservative in a blue state, as heavily blue as New York, California, I mean, you're irrelevant for the most part. And if we squander this opportunity, we already squandered an opportunity to elect a great Reagan-esque candidate in Ted Cruz with an impeccable conservative record. If we squander the opportunity to have a Republican in the White House, majority in the Senate, and in the House, what hope do we have of ever telling the American people, oh, elect us, we're going to get stuff done? We never get stuff done, ever.
Yeah. Mike, thank you so much. Let me go to Eric in Florida, first-time Trump voter. How do you feel today?
A little upset. I'd have to disagree with Joshua, how he thinks, as Ben Shapiro calls it, Trump's playing 4D MAGA chess. I don't think that he's out here doing anything special. He's saying those things to the Democrats, and I honestly feel like if they give him something crappy, he's just signing. He's like, look, guys, I did immigration. You know, like... I'm just pretty upset. I kind of feel like Ann Coulter does every day, tweeting about the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anna's not happy with the developments of this presidency.
Well, she hasn't been happy for a long time, has
yeah,
she?
I mean, you know.
She saw this coming too late, but she hadn't been happy for a long time.
Yeah. She wrote a book called In Trump We Trust.
Yeah.
Which, if you might notice the phrasing there, replaces God with Trump.
Yeah.
but that's the way she kind of treated it leading up to the election, but she's definitely turned. And reconsidered here. And that's because that's a really important issue to her, right? The border was a real thing. She supposedly wrote a good chunk of the initial border policy that Trump released during the campaign. And obviously he has not particularly followed that so far. But that, again, to the point of some of the people who are calling in, is this just Trump saying things? I mean, it may just be that. And if it is, then, you know, You don't worry. I will say that the one thing that is really interesting about this to me is, again, showing how terrible of an idea it was for Democrats to react to Trump the way they did. If they had approached him like this from the beginning,
yes,
they would have been able to get tons of stuff done with a Republican president and not have to deal with any of the downside of it. Instead, they just treated him as if he was Satan slash Hitler from day one. And that caused him to kind of push back and just get into a fight with them. They've got plenty of room to negotiate with this guy, as he showed yesterday.
Let's go to Chase in California. Hello, Chase.
Hey, good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Very good. You voted for Donald Trump. How do you feel today?
Yeah. Well, I've kind of been in this position before where I'm feeling a little uneasy. And then he always goes out and does something that, you know, it brings me back to his side where it's like, oh, yeah, that's my guy. You know, he's just playing those fools. You know, he's just playing them. And you kind of hinted at that in your opening monologue that, you know, it was a Broadway show. So I kind of feel like some of yesterday was kind of just wasn't for us necessarily,
right,
his supporters. It was for others. Now, and I will say that if it leads to the end of chain migration, the lottery, and a border wall, I'm okay with granting citizenship to the DACA people who don't have, you know, criminal records. Go ahead. Good. But it's gotta be part of a broader reform.
Would you say maybe a comprehensive reform is maybe the way you'd want to phrase that? Would you? Would that be the right way to say it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A clean bill of comprehensive reform.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Per se. But,
thank you, Chase. I feel the same way. Look, I just want the border secure. I want it secure. If we, and this is not popular, and I don't like doing it, but if we have to give the people who are here citizenship, it's not a good thing. I don't like it. But if that border is secure, I will trade. But I want the border secure first, and I don't think that's going to happen.
That's the amnesty position from Rubio and Bush and Graham. And I mean, that's been controversial in the past.
So, you know, he said, this is theater. I just want to give you this. This is theater. He's just playing. This is Edgar Allan Poe. Lo, it is gala night. Within the lonesome latter years, an angel throng, bewinged, belight, in veils and drowned in tears. They sit in a theater to see a play of hopes and fears, while the orchestra breathes fitfully the music of the spheres. Mimes, in the form of God on high, mutter and mumble low, and hither and thither fly, mere puppets they, who come and go, at bidding of vast formless things that shift the scenery to and fro, flapping from out their condor wings invisible woe. That motley drama, oh, be sure, it shall not be forgot, with its phantom chased forevermore by a crowd, listen to this, by a crowd that sees it not, through the circle that ever returneth to the very self-same spot, and much of madness and more of sin and horror, the soul of the plot. Okay, so let's just have this right. So something's going on. We're watching a show. It's a play. Something is moving everything, and everybody is watching it, and it keeps coming back to the same thing over and over again. But see amid the mimic rout a crawling shape intrude, a blood-red thing that writhes from out the scenic solitude. It writhes with mortal pangs. The mimes become its food, and seraphs sob at vermin fangs in human gore imbued. So now something has come in, and now it's just gory. What the hell is happening? Who? What is this? Out, out, are the lights, out all. And over each quivering form, the curtain, a funeral pall, comes down with a rush of a storm, while the angels, all pallid and wan, uprising, unveiling, affirm. The play is the tragedy man, and the hero is the conqueror worm. Meaning, yeah, you're all watching a play. It's you being eaten. That's how it ends. I don't know if you saw this. Before Christmas, the head of FEMA, Brock Long, told the news media he wants everybody to understand three fundamental truths. That FEMA is broke, the system is broken, and the new normal means that Americans cannot rely on the federal government when disaster strikes. You have to take care of yourself. Now, they said that right before Christmas, so, you know, that's the time that everybody's thinking about this. This, you know, you say that right before Christmas because you know it'll get into the headlines at Christmas time. This is an admission of failure, and it has to be a wake-up call. Today, at 5 o'clock this morning, the markets over in Asia took a nosedive, and it was all American stocks because China said, you know what, we're thinking about stopping buying U.S. treasuries. Remember all the people who lied to you and said, oh, no, they'll never stop. They need us. No, I said at some point they're going to stop. Please prepare yourself with My Patriot Supply. This week, 102 servings of emergency food for $99. Call them right now. 800-200-7163. Prepare. Listen to the warnings. 800-200-7163 or preparewithglenn.com. That's right now. Preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.
China made a really big move this morning at 5 a.m. Eastern time, saying that they may either slow down or stop buying U.S. treasuries. That put the markets in a tailspin over in Asia and Europe at 5 a.m. There's a lot going on with China militarily, economically, and in space. We'll talk about that for a few minutes when we come back.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Today at 5 o'clock, we're going to get into some of my economic forecasting for 2018, some of the, I hate to use this word, predictions, but because they're not really predictions. They're a look at things, and some of them are a little hopeful, some are a little not so hopeful. But just looking at the where the world is going and what does it possibly mean. One of them today that we're talking about on the show in, what, about a half an hour, Stu, is I believe that China is going to land a rover on the dark side of the moon, and it's not really much of a prediction. They're going to claim this is a science mission, which it is. However, this is really strategic for us. If they're going to use they'll put a satellite up in halo orbit over the far side, and that will be able to control and communicate with their lunar lander or in their rover. That is first time that they've done anything like that. That's a really big deal. And I worry that this is a first step in controlling the space between the moon and the Earth. It's called cislunar space. And it's strategic and really, really important. And you kind of really don't want anybody to control that area of space because it
seems like an advantageous position to
it's
have.
It's a good place. It's kind of like a Death Star position, if you will. If you had, if you had the big laser,
right,
that's where you'd put it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and by the way, all the today, I think online at glenbeck.com is your predictions for 2018 when it comes to foreign affairs. This is one of them. However, a lot of that goes into what's going on in the Middle East, goes on to what's going on with immigration. It goes to the treatment of non-Muslims in the Middle East, what we've talked about with the Nazarene Fund, socialist countries and their economies. It's all up there. And what we're doing is you go to glenbeck.com, you can read through them, and then you upvote the ones you think are going to come true. And at the end of the day, we get to kind of see which ones do you think Glenn is sane on and which ones do you think he's insane on?
Correct. And we're going to get to some of those coming up and also the economic predictions at 5 o'clock only on the Blaze TV. Leroy Chow, he is he's an astronaut. He's an astronaut with NASA. He was the commander of the International Space. Leroy, you're
here.
I should probably ask you.
International Space Station.
The Space Station. And aren't you the guy who went and you have piloted Russian and Chinese or just Russian vehicles?
Oh, no. I'm an American. I was born in the U.S. and I flew 3 space shuttle missions before traveling to the International Space Station as a co-pilot aboard a Russian spacecraft.
That was it.
And I was the commander of the station for 6.5 months during Expedition 10.
So you haven't really accomplished much in your life, is what you're saying.
When are you going to do something with yourself? Leroy, I just have to, just on a personal side, what is it like to come back to Earth and look up and go, I'm never going to go back there, and it was the coolest thing ever?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, when I got selected to be an astronaut, I never imagined the day would come when I would decide to leave NASA. But, you know, during my first 2 weeks at NASA, there was a going away party for one of the senior guys, and I overheard somebody talking to him and talking to another guy and said, well, how do you know when it's time to leave? And he said, you know, when it's time, you'll know. And I remembered that. And 15 years later, sure enough, you know, I was getting ready to go fly to the International Space Station, or actually I just gotten back, and the chief asked me if I would stay for another shuttle mission, and I thought about it for about 30 seconds, and I turned him down. I kind of surprised myself, but I'd done everything that I could do and could hope for in a flying career. You know, I'd flown space shuttle missions. I'd done spacewalks to help build the space station.
Wow.
You know,
what is it like?
The station and done all that stuff, and it was just time to go do something else.
Is there anything that the average person can compare to walking out into space the first time?
No, it is, you know, even the sixth time, it's a bit of a surreal experience. You're actually in a spacesuit, which you can think of as a personal spacecraft. You know, it's got all the life support system and everything, but you're all alone. You know, there's nobody else that can help you except for your partner who's out there with you. But you know, it's kind of a weird feeling the very first time, looking back through the shuttle windows and waving to my buddies inside who are about 3 feet away. But, you know, something happened. We were out there alone and, you know, it was kind of up to us to save ourselves. But, you know, it's okay because we're well trained and everything works well. And, you know, certainly there's risk, but you know what to do. You know, we were able to get our jobs done, but it is kind of a weird thing, you know?
Yeah, I bet it is. I bet it is. I wanted to ask you about the Chinese shot of the what is it, the Chang'e?
Chang'e, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can you explain going on the other side of the moon?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be the first time, really, that we can hear deep sky or radio without all of the static from Earth, right?
Not really, because you still have to relay through that that relay satellite, right? So,
right.
You know, the fact that they're going to the far side of the moon is unique. Nobody has landed a probe over there, not for any particular reason, except that, you know, you have to have a relay satellite in order to communicate with it. So they've got to first put that relay satellite in that halo orbit so that you can relay messages from the far side of the moon back to the ground stations on the Earth. But it's going to be interesting to see if there's any difference between what we found on our scientific probes on the side that we can see versus the far side.
Why all of a sudden, and I think it's a great thing. I mean, I'm excited with, you know, with what Elon Musk is doing and everything else. But why all of a sudden do we have this race, it seems, to go up into space again?
Well, you know, you're right. The commercial side has been the very exciting wild card. I mean, NASA has been going along. We've done the shuttle program, station program, and we're kind of plodding along with exploration, although there's been no no serious, you know, or no significant, I should say, or farther advancing political and financial commitment to that. There's been a lot of talk, but and we are developing the new vehicles, but it's Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos,
yeah,
SpaceX and Blue Origin. And here are two guys who are visionaries and who are willing to commit their resources, their personal and influential resources, to go ahead and do exploration. You know, that's never been done before by commercial companies. You know, where's the profit in colonizing Mars, as Elon Musk wants to do, or in the case of Jeff Bezos, he wants to build infrastructure in low Earth orbit and out into cislunar space. So, you know, he's kind of doing, sounds like kind of a Field of Dreams thing, you know, build it and they'll come.
Yeah.
But it would be difficult to get like a Boeing or a Lockheed. There's no way their shareholders or their boards would let them go do these things.
Yeah.
But these guys, they're out there, and they're serious. They're building rockets. They're launching rockets, and it's pretty exciting. They're pushing exploration for the first time. We've got commercial companies pushing exploration.
How realistic? I've read that helium-3 is the moon is rich with helium-3, and if you had a fusion system that you could, if you could fill the space shuttle with helium-3 and it would run, it would be enough power for the United States for a year. Is there any way to transfer this or use this?
Well, helium-3, I mean, the helium-3 is present on the moon, but it's in the soil in the parts per billion concentrations. So that is, you know, for every gram of helium-3 that you might harvest, it'd be a billion grams of regolith, you know, lunar soil that you'd have to go through and find a way to separate this stuff out. So it's theoretically possible. You could certainly theoretically possible to separate the helium-3 and store it and bring it back to Earth. But the other part of the problem is we don't have a fusion reactor. You know, we've been 20 years from a fusion reactor since the 1950s,
yeah,
right? And so you know, we need to invent a fusion reactor that is practical and actually works before we talk about bringing helium-3 back from the moon. But people that, you know, have used helium-3 as a justification for going back to the moon, and to me that's nice, but there are a lot more practical reasons to go. If we're going to go to Mars, the moon is the perfect place to prove your equipment, to train your crews, to get some experience before sending all that stuff to Mars, because the moon is pretty close. It's only 3 days away. If there's an issue, you can get your crew back. Mars, on the other hand, the closest approach is, you know, on the average, about 6 months away.
As we saw with Matt Damon recently.
Yeah, right. We should. That guy, man, he was...
He's had a tough time.
Yeah.
Many journeys have turned out poorly for Matt Damon. It's sad.
Leroy, when you hear the size of the rocket that Elon Musk is building, he says it's going to be 40 stories tall and can fit a 747 inside of the bay. When you see, and I know this is Hollywood, but when you see these movies and we are developing eventually some sort of interplanetary vehicles, they're enormous. Do we build those in space on the moon, or do we launch them?
You know, there are different ways to look at this. So Elon Musk did announce these huge rockets that he wants to build, and that's to support his vision of colonizing Mars. So he's envisioning building spacecraft that can take 100 or more passengers to go, you know, start to colonize Mars. So there are two schools of thought. Either you launch it all at once, and you've got to have a huge rocket to do that, or you build gas stations in, say, in low Earth orbit or in orbit around the moon, and then you launch kind of an empty vehicle out there and then fuel it up to go, right? So there are pluses and minuses to each approach, but what Elon is talking about is building a huge rocket, much bigger than the Saturn V. In fact, in the 1950s, 1960s, the United States, it was called the Nova rocket. You know, they had these ideas where they were going to build these similarly huge rockets to do interplanetary exploration. And so there's certainly something to that. There's some history to it. You know, the thing with Elon Musk that I've learned is that he may not make the exact date that he projects, but by and large, he's able to get things done. You look at the successes of SpaceX with Falcon 9 and with Tesla. It's pretty impressive.
So if Elon Musk called you and said, hey, I want you to come and colonize Mars, and you could take your family, would you do it?
Nah, you know what? I would love to go explore Mars, but I have no interest in living there. Life is much better here on the Earth, even from low Earth orbit. You know, it's great to go out there and have the adventure, but I'm going to come back here.
Yeah. Leroy, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Leroy,
yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, Leroy Chow, an astronaut extraordinaire, and something that the early astronauts did not have the opportunity to do, and that's go back into space over and over and over again.
Leroy is at leroychao.com, C-H-I-A-O, also at AstroDude on Twitter. Just a solid Twitter name. I don't know if that's it. I mean, when you've been in space, maybe you're not that amazed by your Twitter name, but I kind of am.
I remember I had dinner or a lunch with, second man on the moon.
Buzz Aldrin.
Buzz Aldrin. And I'll never forget the feeling, I was overwhelmed by the feeling of, that was the greatest moment of his life, and he can't move past it.
How could you? I mean, you know, it would be strange to be able to put that in perspective.
Yeah. And you only got one back then. Like he, you know, he'd go three times and like, yeah, I've done it. You know, he had one shot. That was it. Paying off debt can take forever and it piles up really fast, but it doesn't have to be that way. If you own a home and you have some equity in it, you can refi to consolidate and pay off that debt and make life a lot easier. You can pay it off because the interest rate will come way, way down and you can break it up over time. So is this the right choice for your situation? I don't know, but you can find out by making a 10-minute call to the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. It's important that I tell you that they're salary-based because they work for you. Okay, they're not working for the bank, which is providing the loan. Usually banks will take mortgage lenders and they'll say, hey, we'll give your guys, you know, X percent if they sell this mortgage. You get an extra bonus. That's not the deal. So they're looking at you and your situation. So cashing out to pay off that high interest debt, maybe, you know, save a few bucks because you don't have to have the PMI anymore because you've reached the threshold for removal. Whatever the case, American Financing can review your current mortgage and you can look for options that lower your monthly payments or help you achieve a better financial status. It's American Financing. Go to AmericanFinancing.net right now, or you can call them at 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440, or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Sheila is in Florida, and she voted for Donald Trump, and we're kind of taking a temperature of the audience today. How do you feel about what happened yesterday with Donald Trump and DACA and the border and saying, you know, it doesn't matter. I trust the people in Congress. You bring it to me, both Democrats and Republicans, and I will sign it even if I disagree with it, and I'll take the heat for it. Sheila, how do you feel?
Well, actually, it's Lisa, but hello.
Oh, hi, Lisa.
Glenn, I've listened to you since way before 911, and I've just been such a fan, and I've just been fascinated by everything that you have
Thank
done
you.
And accomplished. So
Thank
congratulations
you.
On everything. But, yeah, I was a reluctant Trump voter. My husband was a fan. I was a Ted Cruz person.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, I was fascinated by what was going on. I thought that the theater of bringing the press into that meeting was brilliant. I mean, he took the focus on that Michael Wolff book completely off the table.
Mm-hmm.
He shut down everybody that was saying that he's, you know, mentally deranged and he's a narcissistic baby, the whole bit.
Yep.
He came across as such a negotiator and such a calm, cool, collected person. I am hoping beyond hope that what he's doing is at least getting the Democrats to the table, because he's right. Everybody is so polarized. Nobody can have a conversation about anything. Everybody's back in their corner.
So
they want what they want.
I agree with you, Sheila, and that is good. How will you feel if what he said yesterday is how he does it, which I'll give you DACA, and we can do that first? Does he need to?
Deflated.
What?
Yeah. I'll be pretty deflated about it.
Yeah. Because I don't trust the Democrats would actually give us the wall after they have what they have. But we'll watch. Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate it. God bless.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.
So you're doing a lot of post-holiday shopping from your mobile device? Retailers expect 54% of the holiday shoppers to visit their sites from mobile devices. 54%. Scammers, of course, see this as an opportunity to steal your credit card information and other personal data by distributing phony retail apps. Be cautious when you're going online. Don't only download the apps from the reputable app stores. Read the reviews for any complaints about malware. You got to do that. 1 in 4 people have experienced identity theft. And if you're only monitoring your credit, your identity can still be stolen in ways you may not detect. Thieves could steal your information from the dark web and get an online payday loan in your name. It's dangerous out there. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity thefts. And if you have a problem, U.S.-based restoration specialists will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can uncover threats you might miss. Join now. Get 10% off with promo code BECK, 1-800-LIFELOCK. 10% off with promo code BECK at 1-800-LIFELOCK.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Well, water parks are a growing trend on university campuses, on public university campuses. Gives a whole new feeling to the name of the lazy rivers, doesn't it? Campus. Let the irony of a lazy river on a college campus sink in for a moment, because this is what higher education has come to. From a student perspective, awesome. I mean, who doesn't want the lazy river at their school and a splash park? Of course, it's going to be a selling point for, you know, all the male high school seniors who, you know, decide where to spend all of their parents' money. Colleges don't have to put anything else in the brochure but the pictures of the hot girls at the water park. Now, for anyone who actually cares about the future of our great nation, the question is, why? Who is the genius that said, you know what would really motivate our students and set them apart in the academic world and also for hiring is, you know, to give them a lazy river on campus? Who said this? We're now even removing our students' need for creative problem solving when it comes to recreation and procrastination. No, I don't know. What am I going to do? Don't worry. The water park is right here. Don't waste the brain cells on trying to figure out how you can screw off. Many of these water park colleges are public universities, originally built on the premise that educated citizens are a vital piece to a democratic society. But now college administrations and trustees are way more concerned with building their university brand than maintaining any kind of public trust. So they're turning colleges into an all-inclusive resort. Auburn University's water park has a giant paw print-shaped hot tub. Oh, it can accommodate 45 students. Gee, there's nothing going to be going on in the water park that maybe shouldn't be going on, right? And I'm sure everybody's going to have their homework done. The lazy river at Louisiana State University spells out LSU. Texas Tech has a water park. It has Wi-Fi. I mean, you got to stay connected when you're in the water park. The indoor water park at the University of Missouri features a grotto modeled after the one at the Playboy Mansion. Isn't that great? Booker T. Washington would be so proud. Most of these projects are paid for by raising the student activity fees on top of the regular tuition. Tuition and fees at a public four-year college has grown 60% since George Bush was in office. Not the first one, the second one. Which begs the question of Bernie Sanders and the Democrats. How on earth are you supposed to make college free? Especially with the lazy river. And how do you get anybody to go to college without the water park?
It's Wednesday, January 10th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I noticed in your predictions you didn't call that one, water parks at colleges.
No, in fact, but it does make it easier to, on my so-called predictions, I can just change it to, we're all doomed. How's that prediction?
yeah, that one's still probably there. There's a certain strain of we're all doomed running through many of these. Not all, though.
No, not necessarily all of them. Today we're looking at the predictions, and I want to make this really clear. I've never made predictions before. I have...
Wait a minute. No, I'm not going to let you get away with that. You've definitely made a zillion predictions before. A zillion of them. You've never made annual,
like,
start of the year.
Yeah, I've never made it like this. When I say something, it's usually because I just feel it in my bones. You know, the caliphate is coming. I just knew that it was coming. I've never sat down, you know, during the holiday and said, okay, what do I... This is not a prediction. This is more of a forecast. How's that?
Right. Like, this is, you can't schedule the type of predictions you usually make.
Yes.
Right? Like, right. It comes with a lot of thought. It comes with inspiration. It comes with all sorts of different things.
More inspiration than thought.
This came
with a lot of thought and no general inspiration.
No inspiration at all. And so you can go to glenbeck.com. And yesterday was politics. Today is foreign affairs. The predictions for 2018 that you've decided just to come out, and I would, if you're a sports like talk fan, a sports radio fan, you kind of recognize this almost as bold takes. Like, it's, you're kind of like going out on a limb a little bit. This is not you just saying.
It's not me saying, you know what, put your money here.
Right.
This is me saying, you know what, I could see this happening in the next 12 months.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see what you have predicted, and it's interesting to see how the audience has sort of reacted to it.
Okay, so are the foreign affairs, are those up?
Yeah, they're up to vote for now. So the idea is you vote for it if you think it's going to come true.
So so should we start at the least, what the audience has said is the least? Are there enough votes there yet?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously yesterday was the day we did the politics one.
Okay.
I will tell you that that poll showed the least likely thing to happen, as Hillary Clinton and Umo Abedin will be charged with crimes.
Right. Well, I did say, Bitcoin at $1 million is more likely to happen on that one. But
And you kind of go through, like, the most likely political was the freedom movement will experience somewhat of a renaissance, both U.S. and globally. I don't know if that's wishful thinking, but 23% of people said that was the most.
Tomorrow, can we get to that? What's happening with Trump? And what I talked to you about earlier this morning about Cass Sunstein, would you write that down so we talk about that tomorrow?
Cass Sunstein, yep.
Because that is really kind of like the freedom movement's going to have a resurgence.
Are you agreeing with that because it makes you feel good,
or because it's really happening?
Right.
You know,
because
I mean
it is one of those things that we like. We tend to believe the things that we like.
We like. Right. And there's this new study out from London that's really fascinating.
It is.
We'll get to that tomorrow.
The votes are very early. We just posted this at glenbeck.com. Okay. But I can give them to you in that order if you want.
Sure.
Want to start with the least likely?
Yeah, least likely.
Least likely. As part of the larger Brexit and other independence movements in Europe, the EU will seek and likely enter into a broad free trade agreement. Participating nations will include the US, Canada, and the UK, as well as other Western-aligned powers globally, including Japan and South Korea. This will be done by EU leaders to try to stave off independence movements in Spain, Italy, and other EU member countries. Could just be that they care the least about that one.
Yeah, it could be.
Right?
It could be.
It's a trade prediction. Yeah. It's an EU prediction.
And what it is because I do think that we are so close to collapse, and this there is this freedom movement that is going on, and you look at countries like Italy, it's not in good shape. It's really not in good shape. And there's going to be people like Germany going, get them out of the EU. I don't want to pay for Italy, too. Mm-hmm. We're already paying for Greece. I'm not paying for Italy, too. And so there's going to be this movement inside to get out of the EU. And there's going to be a movement from both the countries saying, I want my freedom to make my own deals. And then there's also going to be the ones that are saying, I want them out. And so I think that they're going to try to play this game to where they can say, oh, you can, you know, go ahead, make some deals here and there. This is way out on a limb.
Is another reason why they think it's the least likely thing to happen out of your predictions, because you're including the U.S. in a free trade agreement, which is essentially what Trump ran against. It would be surprising to see him enter that type of agreement.
Well. We'll see.
All right. Sixth place. China will land a rover on the dark side of the moon.
I'm telling you that's going to happen.
People do not believe you,
well,
apparently.
It's going to happen.
At least early on.
Yeah.
We just talked to a NASA expert who said it's possible.
Yeah. So China's going to land a rover on the dark side of the moon. This is going to be claimed as a scientific mission. I don't think the astronaut believed me on you know what I was talking about, but I think that he said this is exactly what would happen if they do it, that they're going to have to launch a satellite in orbit over the moon, and that satellite will be able to transmit all of the information from the dark side of the moon back to Earth, because you can't get a radio signal or a satellite signal on the dark side of the moon because the moon's in the way.
it'll be
the first time that somebody has put a satellite over the moon and communicate back and go to the dark side of the moon. I believe that they are doing this, as I say here, that they say this is a scientific mission, which it will be, but it is also their first step in controlling cislunar space, which is critical to national security. So that's number six, huh?
It is number six, and I think part of the reason why that's low is obviously Pink Floyd already predicted it.
Okay.
So
right.
That's
okay.
Another part
right.
of it. Number five, the return of the 12th Imam will be used by the leaders of Iran in a desperate attempt to hold on to and consolidate power.
This audience doesn't believe that?
I'm surprised. I mean, it's very early. These votes just started being cast.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to give you the day. We're going to review your votes tomorrow on this. But I mean, they just started being cast.
Okay, so let me give you this.
This
whole
is
thing.
Not your. I think maybe they may be saying, well, the 12th Imam's going to return.
I'm not saying that.
No, you're saying they're going to claim it.
They're already saying that the 12th Imam is back and walking among them. They're already saying that. Okay, so what I'm saying is. I'm not saying you're going to see or meet the 12th Imam or that he's even real. What I'm saying is to quell the mob, they're going to appeal to the uber religious and they're going to say the 12th Imam is here. They're going to use him in any way possible in a desperate attempt to hold on and to consolidate power. They will begin to prepare the religious fanatics for a bloody and bloodthirsty war, which will in time engulf the entire Middle East. And it will mainly happen between Turkey and Iran at first. Those are the two competing powers. Combined in an ongoing conflict against Saudi Arabia and a wider Arab League, Iran will be considerably weakened internally while dealing with these internal conflicts in 2018, reducing their overall influence regionally and globally, and look for an attempt to start a new Arab Spring the week of the first day of spring in Iran, because it is also the Persian New Year.
That could be a big one. I mean, any unrest there can turn into a lot more. The third biggest one is one we actually got a preview of during our Christmas party, during a speech you made at the Christmas party.
Yeah, it was such a holiday.
Yeah, I mean, when you're thinking, stockings, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, you've got people roasting chestnuts, doing Christmas carols, and then obviously you throw in the organ harvesting.
Right.
Which is kind of related. Number three is persecution of Christians, gays, non-Muslim, religious minorities, and those Muslims not deemed Muslim enough. Will reach new lows for humanity in the Middle East, including potentially the harvesting of organs, which, again, if that doesn't make you want, Christmas candy cane, I don't know what does.
So here's the rest of this. Turkey will continue to turn towards religious fascism and will continue to make hard turns towards Sharia law. They're going to continue to march toward a new caliphate or a new Ottoman Empire. The Kurds are going to be the biggest target. What will come out of the next few years is going to resemble the Germans and the Poles in the Ottomans, the Germans with the Poles, or the Ottomans in the 1918 genocide. I think you're going to see genocide with the Kurds and also the Christians and everybody else. It's going to be ugly.
Now, a lot of these predictions you've gone out on a limb on. This one, I cannot give you credit for. Cultural clashes between immigrants and natives will cause a backlash from the public across Western Europe. I mean, isn't that already happening?
Yeah.
You think it's going to get worse?
Yes, it's going to get worse because listen to the rest of it. Even though Russia and Putin's meddling in the elections and the affairs of other Western countries will be made more clear, the press and the governments of the world will ignore this until it's too late.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the interesting things of the Fusion GPS transcripts that were released recently. I mean, both sides are just protecting their political argument with the questions. None of them are taking the Russian threat seriously. And like we've said over and over, this is not about Donald Trump. It's not about Hillary Clinton. It's about Russia and what they're trying to accomplish. And the questioning to the Fusion GPS representatives was much less about that and much more about, well, don't you mean that Donald Trump's innocent? Don't you mean that Hillary Clinton didn't do anything wrong? And it's like, well, that is a part that we're all fascinated by, I guess, but really of limited value when you compare it to what Russia is attempting around the world and here.
So the same thing is going on. We're just not paying attention to the right stories. Yesterday, I had one of the big movers and shakers in Silicon Valley. It came into the office and met with me yesterday for about 2 hours. We had a fascinating conversation. I effectively begged, can we tape this? Fascinating conversation. And it basically was on that kind of topic. People are not aware of what is really happening and what's really important. What's right around the corner, how things are going to dramatically change, and no one is really talking about it. We'll get into that because we have some tech things too, but that's the same thing. Nobody's talking about the real issue, and the real issue is, what the hell is Russia doing?
We have more predictions coming up, but the number one overall prediction that the audience so far has voted for from Foreign Affairs of 2018. You can get the list at glenbeck.com, and you can see the ones from yesterday, which was about politics, and you can get the entire list if you just sign up to the new email newsletter, and they'll send you the whole thing, which is kind of cool.
Goals for 2018? I have them. Do you have them? If you don't get a good night's sleep, that should be your number one goal. If you're getting a bad night's sleep, that should be the number one thing you fix. May I suggest, if you don't have a Casper mattress, try one. It is a great mattress, a unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and comfort so you feel perfectly balanced. Now, it's not right for everybody, I'm sure. I love it. It's made of breathable material, but it's foam, but it's a different kind of foam. So if you've ever had a Tempur-Pedic or something like that, they get so bloody hot that you're sleeping in an oven. This is the thing that Casper has cured. I would have slept in the Tempur-Pedic forever if it was like a Casper. A Casper is like that, except it's not hot. Try Casper yourself for 100 nights in your own home, risk-free. It is new technology that they have pioneered, and you will sleep really well. They'll ship it to you in a compact little teeny box for free. And if you don't love it, don't worry. You don't have to put it back in that tiny little box. They come and pick it up and refund everything, no questions asked. They want you to try it. I want you to try it. Start your year off right with a guaranteed great night's sleep every night. Call Casper. Try yours for 100 nights in your own home free with shipping and free returns if you don't like it. So call Casper.com/Beck. Use the promo code Beck. Save $50 on the purchase of your select mattresses. It is Casper.com/Beck. Promo code Beck. Casper.com/Beck. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.
All right. The forecast. I've never done this before where I take and look at foreign affairs, the economy, high tech, health, everything else, and then break it up and then come up. I came up with 40 different things that I think could happen this year. And it's really kind of more of a sport than anything else. But if you would like to vote on which ones you think are likely and unlikely, you can do that at glennbeck.com. Just look for my predictions for 2018. Foreign affairs is today. We're covering some because of something that happened in China. We're kind of going to cover the economy today at 5 o'clock on the Glenn Beck program.
Yeah, you have a so there's a bunch of ways you can get this. Go to glennbeck.com and vote. Right now, the number one, and this is going to change for me, but number one is Turkey will continue to turn towards religious fascism and will continue to make hard turns towards Sharia law. That's a scary possibility because they're a real power there. This is not just, you know, some, you know, small group doing something that's that we don't like. This is a big, powerful pseudo ally of us over the past few years. They've been part of the hope of the Middle East at times, and that seems to be fading away.
Yeah, they're not an ally. They're not an ally.
But increasingly, right? I mean, like, if you would have said this 10 years ago, you might have been much more optimistic about the future of Turkey.
Yes.
The past few years.
I've never
years,
thought that they belonged in NATO, but I was hopeful because of the way their constitution was set up.
And they were helpful early in the war on terror in some ways. I mean, it hasn't been complete, but it does seem like they're taking a turn towards the dark side.
The entire world is going to take a turn towards the dark side. And when you see these connected with the economic forecast, you will understand why. You'll see that the economic forecast is going to be dicey. I mean, it's weird because as tonight I'll talk about it at 5 o'clock. I believe we are going to go into a melt up, which could take, you know, 24 months. I think we're already in the beginning of it. Dow 25,000. I think we're at the beginning of it. And I think we are going to see, we could see the Dow at 50,000 in 2 years. I think I put on my prediction that Dow 30,000 by the end of 2018. I think it could be higher than that myself. I think it could be 35. But that'll be part of the melt up, and it'll be really critical that you understand that. And we'll talk about that tonight, 5 o'clock, only on theblaze.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, can you guys keep it down? I'm trying to watch my new favorite show on Netflix. By the way, have you seen The Marvelous Miss Maisel?
No, but it won a Golden Globe.
Two.
And you were the only person I've ever heard mention it.
It is fantastic. It is hysterical. It is so well done.
Really?
It's one of my favorite shows. Yeah. Really?
I had never heard of it until they won the Golden Globes the other night.
Really good. And I've been talking about it. Well, I've been telling you guys for about a year.
That's a great show. It's a great show. Yeah, that's
this
is how
we've been ignoring you for about a year.
A good year. A good year. Yeah. That's how things happen with Glenn is like he'll mention something a few times and I'll ignore him. And then eventually someone else with credibility will mention
it. Yeah, I know. And then you'll be like, oh,
wow.
That's
hey, wow.
Can you guys try it down? Because I'm trying to watch my new favorite. My new favorite show. Which is W1A.
I've never heard of that.
Never heard
so
of that.
So I'm going to ignore it for now. This,
I know.
Until
but
it wins a
it will
girl.
Win right. something, and then you'll be like, oh, this W1A thing. This is...
Do you watch anything without an English accent?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's illegal in your home, I thought.
No. But W1A is... I can't believe... It's from the BBC, and I can't believe they actually made it, because it's mocking the BBC. And I mean, hard mockery. And it shows these television and news people just being total frauds that they are, that no one really is saying anything. It's probably double the script, double the lines, you know, word count than any other show I've seen.
It's like an Aaron Sorkin sort of pacing.
Yeah, really fast. Mm-hmm. And you realize you get to the end of scenes and you're like, they didn't say anything to each other. I mean, you know how Seinfeld was a show about nothing?
Mm-hmm.
This one is showing how people in business are so full of crap that they all just placate each other and nothing is ever done. It's really funny. W1A.
Anyway. Sounds good.
Okay, so, Pat.
Yes.
I only am watching these things because, woo, I, watching, you know, the news.
Watching reality?
Yeah.
Drives you out of your mind?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts on Donald Trump and his and the show yesterday?
It was a darker day yesterday. I've been so complimentary, I think, of Trump lately that when I was filling in for you on the show last week, somebody called and accused me of completely flipping on him and his character. And my point was, I haven't been talking about his character. I've been talking about his accomplishments, which are pretty impressive in the first year. When you take into account the Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch and the EPA regulations he's gotten rid of and the Paris Accord he got us out of, as well as the TPP treaty, you know, he gave land back to states like Utah. He has overseen huge gains against ISIS. That war is almost won. Declared Jerusalem the capital of Israel, which I never expected.
There's a collection here. Most of it really is on the executive side, right? Stuff that he can just do.
Yes.
But that's still all
he's cut the size of government.
For.
He's gotten rid of a lot of government jobs. You know, Nikki Haley has been one of the best UN representatives of all time.
We have opened up
drilling in Anwar.
We have taxes down.
No taxes individual mandate.
Yes.
Part of the tax plan.
Some really good things.
There's been some good things.
And then yesterday.
Wait. But I think what you were trying to say there was that has nothing to do with the danger and the trouble that he has caused.
The things that we warned about.
Yeah.
During the campaign.
The divide and the hatred and the back and forth, the baby stuff, the Twitter stuff.
And we've all begged him, stay off of Twitter, please.
Stop it.
By all that's holy,
honestly,
stay off Twitter.
An interesting thought experiment for people who like Trump is if he stopped tweeting today,
mm-hmm.
would any person who is a supporter of Donald Trump abandon him?
No.
Would there be one person? Absolutely not. It's all upside. Yeah. All upside with him stopping that, because there's a lot of people I had the same sort of thought at one point where I was like, oh, this and this was, you know, it's really good. And then the next day he's tweeting about how he's like a genius. And I'm like, this is so ridiculous.
Yes.
It's hard to connect with him.
It's embarrassing to be able to sit down with people and say, hey, he's really accomplished some good stuff, because they can't. Mm-hmm. The average person cannot get past a very stable genius. Shut up.
If you're a stable genius, you don't need to say it.
I've never met a very stable genius who had to point out he was a very stable genius.
You don't do that.
So, for instance,
have I ever said it? No.
No, and you are one, as we know, as we've covered.
Wait, right. And I've never tweeted it.
Okay, so disregard that very stable genius thing that I just said. That apparently is completely
wrong.
And
one of the worst I've ever seen happened the other day when he tweeted out about the Michael Wolff book. Now, I know he was hacked off. He was really upset. But this stuff, just, you can't do it as president. Michael Wolff is a total loser who made up stories in order to sell this really boring and untruthful book. He used sloppy Steve Bannon, who cried when he got fired and begged for his job. Now sloppy Steve has been dumped like a dog by almost everyone. I can't go with you there. I can't.
When he's beat up on Bannon, I don't mind it that much.
I'm with Pat. I want to beat on Bannon.
I do too, but not
as the president.
Right. Not like that.
Yeah.
I mean, look.
Not like that.
People always say, you know, he needs to have that to be able to push back and fight back. And I think that's a legitimate use of Twitter when you're fighting back. It's just the way he does it. It's hard to. I mean, he's been better on policy than I expected. And we said that 100 times on the air. I mean, that's.
Until yesterday, a lot better.
Yeah. Yesterday was a big day.
Yesterday's a bad day, a really bad day for him, and I'm afraid he showed his true colors yesterday, because we said all along he's not conservative. When has he ever been conservative on even the border, which was supposedly his strongest issue? I heard somebody on the way in today describe him as the best conservative immigration guy in the history of the country. I'm like, and no, he's not.
Coming off of DACA, the DACA day, saying that?
Yeah. Jeez. Well, that's why he was disappointed today, because he thought that now.
Okay, he's talked a good game.
He's talked a good game.
But he's also talked for longer in the opposite way.
Right.
So who he had to pay attention to. Who he is, I don't know. I mean, my wife and I were watching this last night, and she just said, Wait, he is asking for the wall, but he's just talking about how cheap it's going to be. I thought it was free. I thought Mexico was going to pay for it. You know, she brought that back.
Yeah, and not only that, but he's backtracked on building a wall across the entire border, which was the thing initially. He was going to build the big, beautiful wall with a big, beautiful door so illegal people can come through it, but illegals would be kept out. Well, that's not what they're even talking about anymore. Now they're talking about a wall system.
Yeah.
They're saying the same things that Democrats have always said. There's places you can't build a wall or a fence. The terrain is too ragged. We don't need it in certain places. You can use sensors. It's problematic because if you really wanted to, you could secure that border. And I don't think that's what we're talking about now. I think they've changed their mind on it, or now they're really showing who they've been all along.
Yeah, and we famously said that we would eat our underwear, Pat.
If he built
90% of the wall,
and
there's no chance.
There's no danger of that at all.
They're not even.
Well, this is why we got 5% of the fencing from under Obama. 5%. Well, that's not even close to what you need to do. Of the 2,000 miles, you probably need at least 1,200.
I would agree with that.
1,200.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Now, are we going to get 1,200 miles of
wall? No way.
No way.
No.
No way. It's just not going to happen.
Maybe get another 5%.
And now they're using the term comprehensive immigration reform, which is amnesty. And we've all been opposed to that for forever.
And the DACA and the Dreamers thing, which is also the same thing.
During the campaign, he said they've got to go.
Yeah.
Even when pushed by Chuck Todd, he's like, "No, well, you're going to separate families? No, they can stay together if they want to. Well, just not here." Right. But there's no right for everybody in the world to live here. I don't know if you're aware of that. There's no right for every citizen of this planet to be here.
It's one fascinating thing about the immigration debate that I've never really understood is I think it's the only legal issue, the only crime committed in which we give more leniency to people who have done it longer.
Right.
If you came here 20 years ago and you've been here for 20 years breaking the law, then we can't do anything to you. But if you just came across the border, we'll push you back. It's like, well, they've done it for a longer period of time. They've broken the law. If you are stealing money from your company for a really long period of time, as opposed to a really short period of time.
Yeah, we don't want to stop you now.
No, you've been doing it.
It's your way of life. You're used to that money now.
He's used to that lifestyle.
We've been stealing from Glenn for 15 years. He doesn't want us to stop now.
It's ridiculous.
No, well, I feel
my
bad.
My family might starve if I stop stealing from him.
I feel bad. Pat has been embezzling since 1994.
We can't.
And
but I can't stop that
his
now.
His children expect it now.
They depend on it.
Are you going to send me to jail and separate my family?
His children aren't going to be able to go to school if he's not embezzling from me.
That's exactly what it is.
So what do you think is going to happen? Because we took a poll of the audience today, and we just listened to him, watched Twitter and took a lot of phone calls, and it split. And it is split, and I would say probably leaning towards no. This is a John Roberts game. He is just negotiating. This is what's happening. He's just
heaven help us. Oh, how I wish that was it. No, that's not what's happening. Do you know what he said? You guys decide, and I'll sign whatever you decide.
That's the most honest thing.
Is that a game? That's the most honest thing he's ever said.
But we've said that.
Bring me whatever it is.
Yeah, the Republicans.
We've said that to the Republicans. He'll sign it. Just send it to him.
Obamacare repeal. He'll sign anything you give to him, and because he wants that win of Obamacare repeal, you should look at that as a positive. Tax reform. Why didn't you go bold?
He wants that win.
Why not? If you could have passed, a 10% flat tax, and you want to sign it.
Mm-hmm.
He's not like one of these presidents is going to push back on those details. He just wanted the tax plan passed.
Can you please?
He would have signed anything.
Sarah, please play the cut where he is talking to the leaders of Congress and saying, "I trust you."
My positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with. I am very much reliant on the people in this room. I know most of the people on both sides. I have a lot of respect for the people on both sides. And what I approve is going to be very much reliant on what the people in this room come to me with. I have great confidence in the people. If they come to me with things that I'm not in love with, I'm going to do it because I respect them.
What?
That's agonizing to me. That is agonizing.
That should be horrifying, really, to both sides.
Mm-hmm.
To both sides. Wait a minute. I don't trust Congress. None of us trust Congress. No. None of us. Neither side trusts Congress.
Right.
And then he went on to say, and by the way, you guys should put earmarks back in. What? That's the swamp. You're saying,
yeah.
Bring me, I will sign, even if I disagree with it. He went on later to say, I will take the heat for it. So he'll run cover for Congress. Just send it to me. And by the way, you should add earmarks into it.
Good God.
What?
Yeah. It was a bad day yesterday.
Yeah, bad day.
Yeah.
Does he turn around?
No.
You think he makes a deal?
I think this is the deal.
Yeah. And bringing Democrats in, which he thought was critical, I think is a disaster. Why? Why bring them in? We've got the majority and the White House. Why? They wouldn't do it with us. And anything they're going to come up with is not going to be good. Sorry, I got no confidence in that.
We already have those guys. We have Mitch McConnell there.
I know.
We already have that point of view.
Right.
Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and TV Network. Once again, Pat was going to bring up the soda tax story. I've been trying to get it to slip into the news all week.
Let's do that. Let me come back. Let me take a quick break.
Okay. You can go to theblaze.com/TV or theblaze.com/radio to get Pat Gray Unleashed every day.
A fresh new year has begun. Setting new goals for your business. It's really hard to reach them unless you have the right people on your team, and ZipRecruiter has transformed the way people go around finding them. ZipRecruiter will post your job to over 100 of the world's leading job boards, and they do it in a single click. Now, here's what makes them different. Once they post, the system goes out and looks for the qualified candidates and invites them to apply. So, you know, you don't have to worry about the right person finding you. ZipRecruiter does that. They go and find them. This is why 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in the first day. ZipRecruiter, smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, you can post jobs at ZipRecruiter for free. You go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. Very glad you're here today. Let's talk about the new soda tax in Seattle.
I love this, and I love what Costco has done. Let me praise Costco for a minute. The story's up on theblaze.com, and you need to check it out. You need to see the pictures of this. But they basically have, instead of just putting up the price, like for example, 36 cans of Dr. Pepper are now $17.55.
That's crazy.
At Costco. Now, that's a pretty high price for Costco, right? Well, normally you say, wow, Costco's raping its customers. What are they doing? Well, when you look at what Costco has done with their labels, they've now pointed out exactly what's going on. They are selling the soda for $9.99, but the Seattle tax is adding $7.56. And then other, you know, different things, you know, add up to $17.55. Gatorade, $15.99 is what Costco wants to sell it for, but the tax adds $10.34. What's that? 67% to the price, which costs brings the total cost to $26.33.
This hasn't worked anywhere.
No.
Anywhere.
Nope. It's chasing businesses. It's chasing jobs. It's hurting the average person.
Isn't it always repealed? Has it ever lasted very long anywhere?
It's still lasting in some of these cities, but it's just been a disaster. Yeah. It was $1.75 per ounce on sugary drinks in the under the auspices that it was going to stop obesity, which has never proved to do.
So now your restaurants are getting hit yet again. The price of going out to dinner in Seattle, if you have a soda, you have a cocktail, through the roof. Plus, it's you know, you have to have, what is it, a $15 minimum wage at the restaurants in Seattle. The restaurants, food service, if you're a food provider in Seattle, you're dying. You're dying. How do you keep your doors open? Progressivism at its best.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.